thank you for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're talking about the budget 2024. We're also talking about iGEM 2023 that is happening currently at the Kuala Lumpur Convention Center from the 4th to 6th. We're also talking about the energy transition conversation of Malaysia. So here to unpack all of the above is our good friend of the show, Dr. Rizal Khairi Ahmad, the CEO of Nano Malaysia Berhad. Rizal, thanks again for gracing us and gracing this studio.
Pleasure to be here.
The National Energy Transition Roadmap is actually a big conversation that needs to be had. Very recently, Rafizi Ramli talked about 1.85 trillion ringgit investment possibility from 10 catalytic activities. One of them is, of course, energy transition. On one hand, that is a number that I think is needed, 1.85 trillion to move the country from whatever energy that we have right now to a cleaner energy. On the other hand, if you want to attract 1.85 trillion up until 2050, you're looking at 100 to 200 billion of either direct domestic investment or FDI into this space. Sounds lofty, no?
Achievable, I must say, because you're talking about a three-decade trajectory. And when you look at the National Energy Transition Roadmap itself, to be part of the bigger picture of the modern economy, even the economy in general, so when you start to slice them on a bite-sized five-year program, every RM case, I think it's something that we can achieve step by step. When we look at some of those pillars that contributes to NETR, National Energy Transition Roadmap, we have multiple pillars, contribution or tributaries. So we have the long-standing solar. We have hydro, which is one of those mainstay in Sarawak, and some parts in Malaysia per se. And now with the advent of hydrogen, which is the buzz of the town and the buzz of the world, I'm sure it'll be a much this discussion topic at the next COP, which is in the Middle East soon, in November. And when you look at those the context of those tributaries or contributors to the bigger picture in the $1 trillion, I think it's achievable. But what is required, I would like to quote Tan Sri Hasan American when we had a session with him, is we need to make sure that all of these so-called sub-ecosystem, they have some synergy. Because no sub-category of energy transition can exist on its own or in vacuum. For example, if I would take jump the gun a bit, hydrogen, green hydrogen. I think we did touch on this matter
at length, but I want to talk more about history economy as well.
So when you look at hydrogen per se, when you go to green hydrogen, you must tap onto renewable sources. Renewable sources will be either hydro or solar. So those sectors need to talk, interact. So there's no such thing as one particular pillar existing in vacuum.
Yeah, but of course, a fellow counterpart agency from another ministry, the Green Tech Malaysia Alliance, for instance, they're trying to bring A to Zero ASEAN conversation into the picture. And it's not just about carbon emission cut down, but of course, greenhouses cut down altogether, including methane and many other stuff. And then now you're talking about NETR and then the hydrogen economy that we need to explore even further. Does this even complement each other, or do you feel that there seems to be a lot of work in trying to create what Tan Sri Hasan was talking about, synergy? Must there be more conversations between these intra-ministerial agencies right now?
I would take that further. They shouldn't be just stopping at conversation, there need to be action.
I mean, we can have conversation.
Conversation is yes, but action is critical. So to when we map out the roadmap, from 2023 to 2050. So we look at all of those individual components to have a good interaction with the respective ecosystem. So for example, when you mention about it again, synergy and whatnot. So that conversation must translate into real action to push the hydrogen agenda way forward in terms of having the economic gain. So earlier on, you talk about multi-trillion dollars, you need to have a good investment. But when we map out, understanding the philosophy of a hydrogen economy technology roadmap, we need to understand that Malaysia needs to have some control over some of the key tools to ensure that to happen, which is why I would like to reiterate again, the roadmap was designed based on build some, buy some. So the build some, buy some concept is Malaysia need to have some technological sovereignty over certain component. People talk technology is just a tool. But number one, tool must be affordable, accessible, right? It must be sustainable, aligning to the energy trilemma, right? Exactly. So the tool is critical for you to make that jump. So Malaysia needs to have control at least half of the tool in order to create that whole ecosystem, the value chain from hydrogen generation, storage, transportation, storage again, and utilization. So the whole gamut must be. But the buy-sum concept allows for international players to come on board where we are able to get FDI, to socialize with DDI, to ensure that it is well synergized, to ensure that we have equity in the economy. Gone are the days that we are pursuing the old economic model where we just allow FDI to storm on the ground and dictate everything.
The clamor for dollars in this space is actually quite competitive. Mm-hmm. We're looking at our neighbors pursuing the same agenda as we are. Mm-hmm. As noble as it is in terms of every country single out to bring about zero emissions, we're also trying to force the same dollar to be invested in countries that might not necessarily have the same restrictions as we do. Mm-hmm. Yes, equity is actually quite important. Mm-hmm. Technology sovereignty is actually quite critical for us to move ahead. Mm-hmm. But other countries might not necessarily have the same kind of restrictions. Mm-hmm. Would we then part away with this very valuable dollars invested into this country because we're demanding so much from these kind of investors?
When you look at even before the much talk about NETR or HETR or whatnot, individually, in a fragmented way, organizations already migrated toward ESG, SDG, mm-hmm. Base or centric investment mm-hmm. as such. So when we design the roadmap and having the roadmap on hydrogen pillar to contribute to zero carbon or carbon neutral by 2050 or as early 2050, we design a site that is supposed to contribute an X amount. Mm-hmm. So that X amount is translated to X dollars in terms of investment and return on investment per se. So when you put all this together, establish the baseline for Malaysia as such, we understand how much is needed to invest. And with the organizing in Malaysia, such as the Subway Group, Kazana, so on and so forth, even us, Nano Malaysia, we already put those ESG as a pillar. So that aligns well with some of the international monetary or mm-hmm. funds for mm-hmm. us to socialize our funds to pursue the same goal. Because we know for a fact, if there is no SG or ESG element in any business endeavor, project, initiative, the money will not come in. So when we have this roadmap as a mainstay in the whole economy madani or economy general, the money will come in naturally. We have a clear roadmap towards where we want to go, carbon neutral, who are the key players. I think it's quite a shoo-in for us. We just need to get it beyond conversation. Action lah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's now focus a little bit more on the hydrogen economy and the hydrogen technology that drives Economy Madani forward. Mm-hmm. Let's start from the basics first. Mm-hmm. Hydrogen and the rollout plan, as I understand it, it's going to be in Sarawak and it's going to be done in a big way. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And of course, we're looking at money coming in into this space as well. Mm-hmm. What would be some of the focus that you're looking at when it comes to deploying hydrogen transition energy right now in Malaysia?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we are, like I said again, inspired by Sarawak. They had the foresight. They started early. They're probably like maybe 5 years ahead in terms of rolling out hydrogen.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know this.
Yeah, because when you look at Sarawak end-to-end, they have Bakun, which is accessible, very accessible and affordable electricity.
Yeah, but it's environmentally destructive.
Well, it's debatable. If you look at long-term gain in terms of how it went to build it, I think that the gain in terms of greenhouse gas emission avoidance, I think we stand to gain over long-term.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so we have to look at it at the bigger picture.
Yeah, but cultural impact. Yeah.
It's a long game.
But
when you look at
displacement of people.
Displacement, but I'm sure there's some compensation towards that where they have offered some job opportunities in the green sectors. So moving downstream, when you look, they already have that resources established. Then you look at how you're able to tap onto that to create green hydrogen without CO2 emission. Then further going downstream, they started to have the showcase, the buses, the cars and whatnot.
Maybe applications.
Yeah, application and whatnot. Like, which is critical to get the buy-in from people like you and me if you were to live in Sarawak. Mm. So in the same vein, the HETR, the Hydrogen Economy Technology Roadmap, has taken in that baseline, the template, into the bigger picture to make sure that it is inclusive to the whole of Malaysia, Semenanjung and the Bonian regions as such. So but in Semenanjung, we don't have the luxury of hydroelectricity in that abundance, like in the gigawatts. We have two pockets here and there.
Yeah, okay, in that abundance.
But we have LSS, large-scale solar farm. So we have that already in place. They are supplying tenaga at a certain tariff rate, FIT and whatnot, but certain excesses, instead of having a large-scale battery, which is very expensive to begin with, there's an opportunity for that to be converted into long-term hydrogen storage, which does not offer any kind of leakage or degradation over a long period of time. And that hydrogen will offer long-term sustainable fuel in case for the future where we start to replace coal, natural gas, so on and so forth. But in Malaysia, Semenanjung Malaysia per se, we are putting in place some catalytic initiative under the Ministry of Science, Technology, Innovation through Nano Malaysia. We call it the mobile hydrogen refueling station. To a smaller scale of what Sarawak is doing, but it needs to be done, a nudge towards creating that value chain in Malaysia. So the refueling station will create the supply of H2. And that H2 comes from our friends from Petronas in Bangi, because they're already producing 50 kilogram of hydrogen per day. In that context, it is already oversupplied because there are no off-takers.
Okay.
Exactly. 50 kilograms is small. It's small.
Wow.
But because there are no off-takers,
so the supply is...
supply,
however small it is, it's still an oversupply.
Oversupply. Therefore, we need to orchestrate the demand. So we are converting some of those buses through our partners into hydrogen fuel cell.
Is it Prasarana? I think I had the Prasarana bus CEO on my show talking about this.
Yeah, Prasarana conversion to hydrogen system. Then we have our partnership with Biforce also converting to hydrogen. So we're creating that commercial sector to be...
But it's still, as you say just now, orchestrating demand.
Yeah, they are...
Not market force that's creating the demand.
Yes. When you are orchestrating, they already have captive market.
Okay.
Whether they are driving diesel-powered buses or trucks, they already captive market. So when you switch, they are able to generate revenue already. So this will be catalytical.
Yeah. And hopefully it can permeate towards
exactly.
the market.
So when you look at that, it's happening, captive market, validated.
Mm.
Then the investment will come in. Not just locally, but inshallah, overseas as well.
Yeah. And because of this, we're looking at 2030 rollout, am I right, of hydrogen?
As early as 2030 in terms of the first major milestone.
Okay.
We look at hitting a national revenue of roughly about 12 billion ringgit.
Okay. Yeah. And will this be enough for the country's need, and is this in tandem with the national energy transition?
Oh, certainly. If you read, I mean, I'm sure you have read the NETR, right?
Yeah.
It prominently featured hydrogen as one of the...
Definitely, as a core pillar.
Contributor to that bigger picture as such. So we align ourselves.
And part of that whole idea of, so far, I've interviewed so many people, the only person that is talking about energy sovereignty is you, Dr. Rizal.
Okay.
Maybe that needs to be permeated across the stakeholders as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the same vein, do you feel that the technology equity on this particular energy source can be attained through hydrogen?
It can, because before... the world or the Malaysia got really excited in hydrogen, we already started investing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody knew what you were talking about even.
Yeah, 5 years ago, if I were to say we are building the solid state hydrogen technology where we're able to produce hydrogen on demand, people say, are you kidding me? Then if we were talking like 2 years ago, we are building industrial capability to build our own electrolyzer, which is a device that is able to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. People say, nah, you're being too ambitious. And now here it is. We are able to report that our anion exchange membrane electrolyzer is probably one of the best, or not the best, in terms of efficiency. It's produced with our partnership with UKM, Zikir Bangsa Malaysia, which people often see as the mecca of hydrogen innovation.
Mm.
So we have that. Even Petronas in Bangi, we made a visit to them. They're able to produce a very competitive proton exchange membrane electrolyzer, which is probably one of the best in the world. We already have that as a basis for our tech sovereignty aspiration, not as early as 2030 or even beyond. We need is critical mass in terms of investment from the bigger players to make that happen into...
Why don't you name some of them? Yeah. What are the bigger players that you're looking at? What are the brands that you're thinking of right now?
Oh, of course, we are...
Is it Gentari? Is it Petronas?
Yeah, Gentari. We have a partnership with Gentari.
Yeah.
We are talking to them. In fact, we are at the final stage of putting some arrangement, official arrangement, to coexist and to complement each other in the hydrogen space as well. And once that established, we established that as a brownfield investment.
Yeah.
We definitely will talk to Kesana Handi dan Dana Impact.
Yeah.
Because right now, we have to make sure that it is palatable to their investment criteria. So we have to talk in terms of brownfield, linguistic terms. Greenfield, they'd be like, So brownfield. Demand is there. Production or supply chain is there. A good baseline, good critical mass. Then we bring it up to the bigger funders.
And of course, the project is validated.
Yes,
demand has been catalyzed.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's our job. at our level. So people in Jintaro, they are able to go a bit further upstream to work with us.
Yeah.
Like pre-com, early stage commercial. Yeah. I'm very thankful that they exist so we can actually work together to initiate the early interest.
People are saying that the creation of Jintaro is, you know, a moment too late. I never would like to argue that. I think it's every moment is timely.
Exactly. Even our existence, which predates the excitement in energy, we started to invest early. So when everything is already on the table, say, here we go, national IPs, we have the SMEs to back us up. We just need to go scale.
Okay. Yeah. Talking about scale, you're going to need a lot of human beings to do the job.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to rely on a lot of AI to get the job done as well. So, are you shopping around? Are we having enough talent out there?
Talent-wise, I'm not too worried. Despite some of those doomsayers saying that we don't have enough interest in stamps and whatnot, the way I see it, taking us through this long game journey, right, 2050, you look at all the universities from UTM, UTP, Petronas, the Jintan University, they are producing engineers in the droves.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do is to supply them the right kind of jobs.
Yeah.
So what we do is need to create that opportunity for them to jump on board. But at the same time, people think, are those jobs lucrative enough? Are we providing enough leadership role for them to be excited on?
Say, for instance, the engineer Prasarana, who has been working on diesel engines for the longest of time, now needs to work on, say, hydrogen.
Yeah.
That is the kind of job that needs to be created.
Yeah, exactly. But when you look about pre-existing so-called workforce,
incumbents,
reskilling and upskilling, that also offers a huge business opportunity for training academies.
Mm.
Yeah. For example, if you have been working in the hydrocarbon industry, there's hydrogen in that carbon.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Except you want to move away from carbon.
Exactly. That carbon component, you either capture it, you store it, and you put it into good use. But the hydrogen part, you just push it out in the open to be burned as fuel, which is clean.
Are you working with training providers to equip them for that level of training and upskilling?
We have started to, because in another parallel activity, we have presented to the government the white paper for EV conversion.
Yes.
That also covers...
I'm familiar with the white paper, unfortunately. Yeah.
So that white paper is an effort to legalize conversion from ICE engine to... electric.
Mm-hmm.
So that we are working with the likes of JKR to certify early pockets of workshop to be upskilled and reskilled so they're able to convert.
Especially high density areas.
Yes. And then they just go to Puspacom or whatever it is, the process that will be allowed by MOT. Tick. So that allows the existing, so-called incumbents, as you said, to jump into the EV bandwagon, which hydrogen will play a subset of, because hydrogen fuel cell EV is part of that low-carbon mobility blueprint that we aspire to contribute to low-carbon.
Let's talk a little bit more about budget 2024. There's a lot of wish lists that has to be spoken of, particularly in folks like you guys, China, Malaysia, and what you want to see there.
Mm.
The last time I had you on, you were talking about the shock that you had in terms of the allocation that you got. Mm. Thinking outside of Malaysia and work towards energy transition, what would be some of the wish lists that you want to see in this budget?
Wish list, it's more towards how we scale up. Scale opportunity based on local techs and local talents.
So you're talking about more money into, say, the startup ecosystem?
Yes, and beyond. Because tech and innovation is not restricted to just startup. Because the amount of work that we have done for the past one RMK, the 11 Malaysia plan, and currently wading through the middle of the 12 Malaysia plan, I think 80-90% of our partners are SMEs. So getting the
80-90%.
Cajoling them, persuading them to jump onto the innovation bandwagon, and some of them are already working in the hydrogen space.
Yeah,
is no easy feat, lah.
No.
Because for them to be convinced that they need to go into the innovation beyond their day in day out, attending their bottom line needs was quite an interesting challenge that we took up. So we managed to get some of them on board. I think we have about 60-70 of them already in our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and push them in the right way, I think it's critical, but now they need to scale up. They need to graduate beyond SME.
Specifically, what is it that you need? Like scale up, what do you mean? Like more money inside it? Like tax rebates, what?
I mean, the whole framework, government framework in terms of incentivization. For example, if you look at the US, which they have put in place the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, so especially for hydrogen, because they have recently launched.
What was it again?
The America, USA. I think in the month of June, they have launched their own hydrogen strategy. So they've done the whole value chain comprehensive nudge to get everyone to jump onto the hydrogen bandwagon. And one of them would be the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, which translate into some kind of incentive package for hydrogen producers, which amounting to about $3 per kilogram, every kilogram of hydrogen being produced.
Okay. So we can have that?
We can have something similar. So that is one part. But funding in terms of investment must also come into play, because for you to scale up, you need to buy capital equipment.
Yes, of course.
But we shouldn't be overly dependent on the government. So the whole private investment funds or GLICs and whatnot needs to play their role to make sure that this happens.
So how to incentivize them to play their role?
Right? That's the thing. That's the way we're trying to figure out. But we have some semblance of an idea to look into how the amount invested should give them some kind of tax rebate or whatnot.
So I'm going to ask you to out your boss right now. So the Minister of Science and Technology, Charlie Kang, and of course the Minister of NREG, Nazmi, they seem to be clued in into what needs to be done, both of them. Mm-hmm. However, they are facing a challenge where it is unlike any other compatriots that they have in other ministries. You know, they have to fight the everyday battles of, you know, rising cost, you know, food prices, food shortages, food security or insecurity at that point in time. Do you feel that they are going to be isolated in terms of trying to get the job done? Or they might not necessarily have enough allies in the other cabinet members to get this done? Or maybe only Rafizi sees this? Where do you see the whole interrelation between cabinet members and getting the job done?
If you look at Rafizi's portfolio, YB Rafizi is another cross-cutting...
Yeah, it cuts across the whole gamut.
Exactly. Then if you have the SDI, it cuts across. Mm. If you were to bring in YB Ni Nazmi on into the fold, energy cuts across. Mm. Anything requires energy to move. Mm. So these three fellas needs to really work hand in hand together to put everything in the right context to work into creating this macroeconomic model and microeconomic model.
My fear is that they have to rely so much on internal motivation, because it's not like the house is on fire and therefore, you know, I mean, like food price rises, and of course immediately you have to handle it. Yeah. This is more of you need to have the internal motivation to get the job done.
Yeah. Because while we're addressing food prices, trying to curtail it, people are talking about energy transition, wouldn't it be expensive?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the whole idea of having this macroeconomic model and microeconomic model, if you have to look from a household perspective. Mm. So one of my colleagues gave me this idea that when you look at a household microeconomic model, we call it Madani economic model, for example.
Okay.
As a working model.
Okay.
So every household will have to pay for energy regardless, via solar or fossil fuel or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, and we know for a fact our fossil fuel industry is heavily subsidized.
Yes.
Okay. So in order for us to allow for everyone, people like you and me, wearing the average Joe hat, for us to transit, then there should be a transfer of subsidy. Mm-hmm. So the total cost of living remains the same.
Mm-hmm. So for example, but it's still 80 billion subsidy bill lah.
Bill, but still the same. At least you can manage it for the time being, for the short term.
Yeah. While so it doesn't have a direct impact on my wallet size.
Exactly. So we need to work on that model so for the short term to allow for that transition to be smooth while we work on a better model for us to reduce cost of living.
It's called transition for a reason.
Exactly. So that subsidy transfer needs to be put in place.
How do you think we're faring? I mean, the idea is good, right? I guess.
Like I said, action speaks louder than words. Oh. Yeah. So I'm sure the likes of YB Chandika, YB Rafizi, and YB Nigazmi, I'm sure they have the enough grey matter for them to work out. Obviously, myself, Nano Malaysia, Soho, we're ever ready to support to articulate how the right mechanism to work, because when we chart out the hydrogen roadmap from A to Z, there's various components. Not only just mobility, we're talking about hydrogen even in food processing, electronics and whatnot. So it goes beyond what people think. We talk about hydrogen is just purely energy and mobility. It's everything.
What's your view on punitive tax model like carbon tax right now? Do you think that's a good idea?
Punitive, yes and no.
So you don't think it's punitive?
The yes part, if you look at from the punitive measure, you need to have the carrot and stick. Every economy model will have the carrot and stick. So the carrot part is you motivate people when they have...
So subsidies, incentives, tax breaks.
Yeah. But when it comes to the stick, it's like if you don't do this, you'll be missing out on A, B, C, D, E.
Yeah.
Maybe more funds, more assistance will be blocked because all of the governments, the investment institutions have jumped onto it. You don't have ESG, SDG, you're not part of it. I'm sorry. So that, in a way, is a punishment or punitive measure in itself, even though people don't see it that way.
My guest yesterday, Elena Jani of GreenTech, talked about an audit measure. That would be her wish list on the budget. Do you agree with that?
Audit measure? Well, audit is a good thing to have because it puts any organization to be fully transparent what they do when it comes to their carbon emission, whatever they emit to the environment, and what they do with carbon. For example, if, from my point of view, people are so fearful of carbon. Yeah, but
shouldn't we be?
We're not. We are made of carbon, you and me. We are carbon-based organism. So the fact that we are made of carbon shows that God is have been trying to tell us that it's how you manage carbon is the key. Carbon is not the devil. We are. So when you are able to sequester carbon, put it to good use, carbon is benefiting. I would probably, the next clarion call to the global economy is, we're talking about recarbonization. How to introduce carbon into the circular economy to good use. When you capture the CO2 or CO or whatever it is, put them in good use, which is carbon fiber, graphene, carbon N2, advanced materials, so on and so forth. Yep. And you can even reconstitute material to whatever that you like.
Basically CCUS or carbon capture, utilization, storage.
And you can create fertilizer, you can create food, carbohydrate, carbs.
So you think about carbon in a different light, basically.
Yes. Carbon is our friend, not the enemy. So when it comes to back to the audit issue, I think when you go beyond that, you have to think there's a comprehensive measure for you to participate in recarbonization. Decarbonization is probably is the current buzz, but I'm looking at recarbonization to create that inclusivity to ensure that we are managing carbon.
That's my big takeaway from this conversation. The last one we had was tax sovereignty. Now it's recarbonization.
Yeah, I always come up with new tax.
Yeah, itulah. Final comments before we conclude our conversation, Dr. Riza.
For me, don't be afraid of this energy transition. Embrace the change, be the change. And hydrogen is coming your way, whether you like it or not. Basically, have gone beyond the point of no return. We had many false starts in the past, since the 70s. It is here to stay, and I hope everyone will embrace the economy and technology rollout as much as I do. I'm excited, and everyone should be.
I'm excited as it is, but having a teenage daughter that is environmentally conscious is also a handful. I got to deal with two issues now, environmentalism and my daughter. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Rizal Khairi Ahmad, the CEO of Nano Malaysia Berhad. You can learn more about Nano Malaysia and their work at their website or their social sites. Do check that out. Of course, Dr. Rizal is a prolific evangelist when it comes to the tech innovation and, of course, energy transition. So do check out his personal work at that as well. For now, that's all that we have. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one. Thank you for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're talking about the budget 2024. We're also talking about iGEM 2023 that is happening currently at the Kuala Lumpur Convention Centre from the 4th to 6th. We're also talking about the energy transition conversation of Malaysia. So here to unpack all of the above is our good friend of the show, Dr. Rizal Khairi Ahmad, the CEO of Nano Malaysia Berhad. Rizal, thanks again for gracing us and gracing this studio.
Glad to be here.
The National Energy Transition Roadmap is actually a big conversation that needs to be had. Very recently, Rafizi Ramli talked about 1.85 trillion ringgit investment possibility from 10 catalytic activities. One of them is, of course, energy transition. On one hand, that is a number that I think is needed, 1.85 trillion to move the country from whatever energy that we have right now to a cleaner energy. On the other hand, if you want to attract 1.85 trillion up until 2050, you're looking at 100 to 200 billion of either direct domestic investment or FDI into this space. Sounds lofty, no?
Achievable, I must say, because you're talking about a three-decade trajectory. And when you look at the National Energy Transition Roadmap itself, to be part of the bigger picture of the modern economy, even the economy in general. So when you start to slice them on a bite-sized five-year program, every RM case, I think it's something that we can achieve step by step. When we look at the some of those pillars that contributes to NETR, right, National Energy Transition Roadmap, we have multiple pillars, contribution or tributaries. So we have the long-standing solar. We have hydro, which is one of those mainstay in Sarawak, and some parts in Malaysia per se. And now with the advent of hydrogen, which is the buzz of the town and the buzz of the world, I'm sure it'll be a much this discussion topic at the next COP, which is in the Middle East soon, in November. And when you look at those, the context of those tributaries or contributors to the bigger picture in the $1 trillion, I think it's achievable. But what is required, I would like to quote Tan Sri Hasan American when we had a session with him, is we need to make sure that all of these so-called sub-ecosystem, they have some synergy. Because no sub-category of energy transition can exist on its own or in vacuum. For example, if I would take, jump the gun a bit, hydrogen, green hydrogen, I think we did touch on this matter.
At length, but I want to talk more about history economy as well.
So when you look at hydrogen per se, when you go to green hydrogen, you must tap onto renewable sources. Renewable sources will be either hydro or solar. So those sectors need to talk, interact. So there's no such thing as one particular pillar existing in vacuum.
Yeah, but of course, a fellow counterpart agency from another ministry, the Green Tech Malaysia Alliance, for instance, they're trying to bring A to Zero ASEAN conversation into the picture. And it's not just about carbon emission cut down, but of course, greenhouses cut down altogether, including methane and many other stuff.
Correct.
And then now you're talking about NETR and then the hydrogen economy that we need to explore even further.
Yeah.
Does this even complement each other, or do you feel that there seems to be a lot of work in trying to create what Tan Sri Hasan was talking about, synergy? Must there be more conversations between these intra-ministerial agencies right now?
I would take that further. They shouldn't be just stopping at conversation. There need to be action.
I mean, we can have conversation.
Conversation is yes, but action is critical.
Right.
So to, when we map out the roadmap, okay, from 2023 to 2050. So we look at all of those individual components to have a good interaction with the respective ecosystem. So for example, when you mention about do it again, synergy and whatnot. So that conversation must translate into real action to push the hydrogen agenda way forward in terms of having the economic gain. So you, earlier on, you talk about multi-$1 trillion, you need to have a good investment. But when we map out understanding the philosophy of a hydrogen economy technology roadmap, we need to understand that Malaysia needs to have some control over some of the key tools to ensure that to happen, which is why I would like to reiterate again, the roadmap was designed based on build some, buy some. So the build some, buy some concept is Malaysia need to have some technological sovereignty over certain component. People talk technology is just a tool. But number one, tool must be affordable, accessible, right? It must be sustainable, aligning to the energy trilemma, right? Exactly. So the tool is critical for you to make that jump. So Malaysia needs to have control at least half of the tool in order to create that whole ecosystem, the value chain from hydrogen generation, storage, transportation, storage again, and utilization. So the whole gamut must be. But the buy some concept allows for international players to come on board where we are able to get FDI to socialize with DDI to ensure that it is well synergized, to ensure that we have equity in the economy. Gone are the days that we are pursuing the old economic model where we just allow FDI to storm on the ground and dictate everything.
The clamour for dollars in this space is actually quite competitive. We're looking at our neighbours pursuing the same agenda as we are. As noble as it is in terms of every country single out to bring about zero emissions, we're also trying to force the same dollar to be invested in countries that might not necessarily have the same restrictions as we do. Yes, equity is actually quite important. Technology sovereignty is actually quite critical for us to move ahead. But other countries do not might not necessarily have the same kind of restrictions. Would we then part away with this very valuable dollars invested into this country because we're demanding so much from these kind of investors?
When you look at even before the much talk about NETR or HETR or whatnot, individually, in a fragmented way, organizations already migrated toward ESG, SDG, you know, base or centric investment as such. So when we design the roadmap and having the roadmap on hydrogen pillar to contribute to zero carbon or carbon neutral by 2050 or early 2050, we designed a site that is supposed to contribute an X amount. Mm-hmm. So that X amount is translated to X dollars in terms of investment and return on investment per se. So when you put all this together, establish the baseline for Malaysia as such, we understand how much is needed to invest. And with the organizing Malaysia, such as the Subway Group, Kazana, so on and so forth, even us, Nano Malaysia, we already put those ESG as a pillar. So that aligns well with some of the international monetary or mm-hmm. funds for mm-hmm. us to socialize our funds to pursue the same goal. Because we know for a fact, if there is no SG or ESG element in any business endeavor, project, initiative, the money will not come in. So when we have this roadmap as a mainstay in the whole economy Madani or economy general, the money will come in naturally. We have a clear roadmap towards where we want to go, carbon neutral, who are the key players. I think it's quite a shoe-in for us. We just need to get it beyond conversation. Action lah is key.
Okay. Yeah. Let's now focus a little bit more on the hydrogen economy and the hydrogen technology that drives economy Madani forward. Mm-hmm. Let's start from the basics first. Mm-hmm. Hydrogen and the rollout plan, as I understand it, it's going to be in Sarawak and it's going to be done in a big way. Mm. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And of course, we're looking at money coming in into this space as well. Mm. What would be some of the focus that you're looking at when it comes to deploying hydrogen transition energy right now in Malaysia?
Mm. I mean, we are, like I said again, inspired by Sarawak. They had the foresight, they started early. They're probably like maybe 5 years ahead in terms of rolling out hydrogen.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know this.
Yeah, because when you look at Sarawak end-to-end, they have Bakun, which is accessible, very accessible and affordable electricity.
Yeah, but it's environmentally destructive.
Well, it's debatable. If you look at long-term gain in terms of how it went to build it, I think that the gain in terms of greenhouse gas emission avoidance, I think we stand to gain over long term.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so we have to look at it at the bigger picture.
Yeah, but cultural impact. Yeah.
It's a long game.
But
when you look at
displacement of people.
Displacement, but I'm sure there's some compensation towards that where they have offered some job opportunities in the green sectors. So moving downstream, when you look, they already have that resources established. Then you look at how you're able to tap onto that to create green hydrogen without CO2 emission. Then further going downstream, they started to have the showcase, the buses, the cars and whatnot.
Maybe applications.
Yeah, application and whatnot. Like, which is critical to get the buy-in from people like you and me if you were to live in Sarawak.
Mm.
So in the same vein, the HETR, the Hydrogen Economy Transition Roadmap, has taken in that baseline, the template, into the bigger picture to make sure that it is inclusive to the whole of Malaysia, Semenanjung and the Bonian regions as such. So but in Semenanjung, we don't have the luxury of hydroelectricity in that abundance, like in the gigawatts. We have two pockets here and there.
Yeah, okay, yeah. In that abundance.
But we have LSS, large-scale solar farm. So we have that already in place. They are supplying tenaga at a certain tariff rate, FIT and whatnot, but certain accesses, instead of having a large-scale battery, which is very expensive to begin with, there's an opportunity for that to be converted into long-term hydrogen storage, which does not offer any kind of leakage or degradation over a long period of time. And that hydrogen will offer long-term sustainable fuel in case for the future where we will start to replace coal, natural gas, so on and so forth. But in Malaysia, Semenanjung Malaysia per se, we are putting in place some catalytic initiative under the Ministry of Science, Technology, Innovation through Nano Malaysia. We call it the Mobile Hydrogen Refueling Station. To a smaller scale of what Sarawak is doing, but it needs to be done. A nudge towards creating that value chain in Malaysia. So the realization will create the supply of H2. And that H2 comes from our friends from Petronas in Bangi, because they're already producing 50 kilograms of hydrogen per day. In that context, it is already oversupplied because there are no off-takers.
Okay.
Exactly. 50 kilograms is small. It's small.
Wow.
But because there are no off-takers...
So the supply is...
Supply,
however small it is, it's still an oversupply.
Oversupply. Therefore, we need to orchestrate the demand. So we are converting some of those buses through our partners into hydrogen fuel cell.
Is it Prasarana? I think I had the Prasarana bus CEO on my show talking about this.
Yeah, Prasarana conversion to hydrogen system. Then we have our partnership with Biforce also converted to hydrogen. So we're creating that commercial sector to be off-takers.
But it's still, as you say just now, orchestrating demand.
Yeah, they are...
Not market force that's creating the demand.
Yes. When you are orchestrating, they already have captive market.
Okay.
Whether they are driving diesel-powered buses or trucks, they already captive market. So when you switch they're able to generate revenue already. So this will be catalytical.
Yeah. And hopefully it can permeate towards
exactly.
the market.
So when you look at that, it's happening, captive market, validated. Mm. Then the investment will come in. Not just locally, but inshallah, overseas as well.
Yeah. And because of this, we're looking at 2030 rollout, am I right, of hydrogen?
As early as 2030 in terms of the first major milestone.
Okay.
We look at hitting a national revenue of roughly about 12 billion ringgit.
Okay. Yeah. And will this be enough for the country's need, and is this in tandem with the national energy transition?
Certainly. If you read, I mean, I'm sure you have read the NETR, right?
Yeah.
It prominently featured hydrogen as one of the...
Definitely, as a core pillar.
Contributed to that bigger picture as such. So we align ourselves.
And part of that whole idea of, so far, I've interviewed so many people, the only person that is talking about energy sovereignty is you, Dr. Rizal. Maybe that needs to be permeated across the stakeholders as well.
Yeah.
But in the same vein, do you feel that the technology equity on this particular energy source can be attained through energy, through hydrogen?
It can, because before... the world or the Malaysia got really excited in hydrogen. We already started investing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody knew what you were talking about even.
Yeah, 5 years ago, if I were to say we are building the solid state hydrogen technology where we're able to produce hydrogen on demand, people say, are you kidding me? Then if we were talking like 2 years ago, we are building natural capability to build our own electrolyzer, which is a device that is able to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. People say, nah, you're being too ambitious. But now here it is. We are able to report that our anion exchange membrane electrolyzer is probably one of the best, or not the best, in terms of efficiency. It's produced with our partnership with UKM, Zikmangsan Malaysia, which people often see as the mecca of hydrogen innovation. Mm. So we have that. Even Petronas in Bangi, we made a visit to them. They're able to produce a very competitive proton exchange membrane electrolyzer, which is probably one of the best in the world. We already have that as a basis for our tech sovereignty aspiration, not as early as 2030 or even beyond.
What we need is
critical mass of investment from the bigger players to make that happen into...
Why don't you name some of them? Yeah. What are the bigger players that you're looking at? What are the brands that you're thinking of right now?
Oh, of course, we are...
Is it Gentari? Is it Petronas?
Yeah, Gentari. We have a partnership with Gentari.
Yeah.
We are talking to them. In fact, we are at the final stage of putting some official arrangement, to coexist and to complement each other in the hydrogen space as well. And once that established, we establish that as a brownfield investment.
Yeah.
We definitely will talk to Kesana Handi dan Dana Impact.
Yeah.
Because right now, we have to make sure that it is palatable to their investment criteria. So we have to talk in terms of brownfield, linguistic terms. Greenfield, they'll be like,
Yeah.
So brownfield. Demand is there. Production or supply chain is there. A good baseline, good critical mass, then we bring it up to the bigger funders.
And of course, the project is validated.
Yes.
Demand has been catalyzed.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's our job at our level. So people in Gentari, they are able to go a bit further upstream
to work with us. Yeah, because
Yeah. Like pre-com, early stage commercial. Yeah. I'm very thankful that they exist, so we can actually work together to initiate the early interest.
People are saying that the creation of Gentari is moment too late. I never would like to argue that. I think it's every moment is timely.
Exactly. Even our existence, which predates the excitement in energy, we started to invest early. So when everything is already on the table, say, here we go, national IPs, we have the SMEs to back us up. We just need to go scale.
Okay. Yeah. Talking about scale, you're going to need a lot of human beings to do the job.
Yeah.
You're going to rely on a lot of AI to get the job done as well. So, are you shopping around? Are we having enough talent out there?
Talent-wise, I'm not too worried. Despite some of those doomsayers saying that we don't have enough interest in stamps and whatnot, the way I see it, taking us through this long game journey, right, 2050, you look at all the universities from UTM, UTP, Petronas, the Jitang University, they are producing engineers in the droves.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do is to supply them the right kind of jobs.
Yeah.
So what we do is need to create the opportunities for them to jump on board. But at the same time, people think, are those jobs lucrative enough? Are we providing enough leadership role for them to be excited on?
Say, for instance, the engineer Prasarana, who has been working on diesel engines for the longest of time, now needs to work on, say, hydrogen.
Yeah.
That is the kind of job that needs to be created.
Yeah, exactly. But when you look about pre-existing so-called workforce,
incumbents,
reskilling and upskilling, that also offers a huge business opportunity for training academies. Mm. Yeah, yeah. For example, if you have been working in the hydrocarbon industry, there's hydrogen in that carbon.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. Except you want to move away from carbon.
Exactly. That carbon component, you either you capture it, you store it, and you put it into good use. But the hydrogen part, you just push it out in the open to be burned as fuel, which is clean.
Are you working with training providers to equip them for that level of training and upskilling?
We have started to, because in another parallel activity, we have presented to the government the white paper for EV conversion.
Yes.
That also covers...
I'm familiar with the white paper, unfortunately. Yeah.
So that white paper is an effort to legalize conversion from ICE engine to... electric.
Mm-hmm.
So that, we are working with the likes of JKR to certify early pockets of workshop to be upskilled and reskilled so they're able to convert.
Especially high density areas.
Yes, yes. And then they just go to Pusparcom or whatever it is, the process that will be allowed by MOT. Tick. So that allows the existing, so-called your incumbents, as you said, to jump into the EV bandwagon, which hydrogen will play a subset of, because hydrogen fuel cell EV is part of that low carbon mobility blueprint that we aspire to contribute to low carbon.
Let's talk a little bit more about budget 2024. There's a lot of wish lists that has to be spoken of, particularly in folks like you guys, China, Malaysia, and what you want to see there. The last time I had you on, you were talking about the shock that you had in terms of the allocation that you got. Thinking outside of Nano Malaysia and work towards energy transition, what would be some of the wish lists that you want to see in this budget?
Wish list, it's more towards how we scale up. Scale up opportunity based on local techs and local talents.
So you're talking about more money into, say, the startup ecosystem?
Yes, and beyond. Because tech and innovation is not restricted to just startup. Because the amount of work that we have done for the past one RMK, the 11 Malaysia plan, and currently wading through the middle of the 12 Malaysia plan, I think 80-90% of our partners are SMEs. So getting the...
80-90%?
Yeah.
Wow.
Cajoling them, persuading them to jump onto the innovation bandwagon, and some of them are already working in the hydrogen space, is no easy feat. Because for to be convinced that they need to go into the innovation beyond their day in, day out, attending their bottleneck needs, was quite an interesting challenge that we took up. So we managed to get some of them on board. I think we have about 60-70 of them already in our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And getting... push them in the right way, I think it's critical, but now they need to scale up. They need to graduate beyond SME.
Specifically, what is it that you need? Like scale up, what do you mean? Like more money inside it? Like tax rebates, what?
I mean, the whole framework, government framework in terms of incentivization. For example, if you look at the US, which they have put in place the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, so they, especially for hydrogen, because they have recently launched...
What was it again?
The America, USA. I think in the month of June, they have launched their own hydrogen strategy. So they've done the whole value chain comprehensive nudge to get everyone to jump onto the hydrogen bandwagon. And one of them would be the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, which translate into some kind of incentive package for hydrogen producers, which amounting to about $3 per kilogram, every kilogram of hydrogen being produced.
Okay. So we can have that?
We can have something similar. So that is one part. But funding in terms of investment must also come into play, because for you to scale up, you need to buy capital equipment.
Yes, of course.
But we shouldn't be overly dependent on the government. So the whole private investment funds or GLICs and whatnot needs to play their role to make sure that this happens. So
how to incentivize them to play their role?
Right. That's the thing. That's the way we're trying to figure out. But we have some semblance of an idea to look into how the amount invested should give them some kind of tax rebate or whatnot.
So I'm going to ask you to out your boss right now. So the Minister of Science and Technology, Chan Lee Kang, and of course the Minister of NREG, Nazmi, they seem to be clued in into what needs to be done, both of them. Mm-hmm. However, they are facing a challenge where it is unlike any other compatriots that they have in other ministries. You know, they have to fight the everyday battles of, you know, rising cost, you know, food prices, food shortages, food security or insecurity at that point in time. Do you feel that they are going to be isolated in terms of trying to get the job done, or they might not necessarily have enough allies in the other cabinet members to get this done, or maybe only Rafizi sees this? Where do you see the whole interrelation between cabinet members and getting the job done?
If you look at Rafizi's portfolio, YB Rafizi is another cross-cutting.
Yeah, it cuts across the whole gamut. Yeah,
exactly. Then you have the SDI, it cuts across. Mm. If you were to bring in YB Nin Azmi into the fold, energy cuts across. Mm. Anything requires energy to move. Mm. So these three fellas needs to really work hand in hand together to put everything in the right context to work into creating this macroeconomy model and microeconomy model.
My fear is that they have to rely so much on internal motivation, because it's not like the house is on fire and therefore, you know, I mean, like food price rises, and of course immediately you have to handle it. Yeah. This is more of you need to have the internal motivation to get the job done. Yeah.
Because while we're addressing food prices, trying to curtail it, people are talking about energy transition, wouldn't it be expensive?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the whole idea of having this macroeconomic model and microeconomic model, if you had to look from a household perspective. Mm. So one of my colleagues gave me this idea that when you look at a household microeconomic model, we call it micro Madani economic model, for example.
Okay.
As a working model.
Okay.
So every household will have to pay for energy regardless, via solar or fossil fuel or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, and we know for a fact our fossil fuel industry is heavily subsidized.
Yes.
Okay. So in order for us to allow for everyone, people like you and me, wearing the average Joe hat, for us to transit, then there should be a transfer of subsidy. Mm-hmm. So the total cost of living remains the same.
Mm-hmm. So for example, but it's still 80 billion subsidy bill lah.
Bill, but still the same. At least you can manage it for the time being, for the short term.
Yeah. So it doesn't have a direct impact on my wallet size.
Exactly. So we need to work on that model. So for the short term, to allow for that transition to be smooth, while we work on a better model for us to reduce cost of living.
It's called transition for a reason.
Exactly. So that subsidy transfer needs to be put in place.
How do you think we're faring? I mean, the idea is good, right?
Like I said, action speaks louder than words. So I'm sure the likes of YB Chandika, YB Rafizi, and YB Nin Azmi, I'm sure they have the enough grey matter for them to work out. Obviously, myself, Nano Malaysia, Soho, we're ever ready to support to articulate how the right mechanism to work, because when we chart out the hydrogen roadmap from A to Z, there's various components. Not only just mobility, we're talking about hydrogen even in food processing, electronics and whatnot. So it goes beyond what people think. We talk about hydrogen is just purely energy and mobility. It's everything.
What's your view on punitive tax model like carbon tax right now? Do you think that's a good idea?
Punitive, yes and no.
So you don't think it's punitive?
The yes part, if you look at from the punitive measure, you need to have the carrot and stick. Every economy model will have the carrot and stick. So the carrot part is you motivate people when they have...
So subsidies, incentives tax whatnot. Breaks. Yeah.
But when it comes to the stick, it's like if you don't do this, you'll be missing out on A, B, C, D, E.
Yeah.
Maybe more funds, more assistance will be blocked because all of the governments, the investment institutions have jumped onto it. You don't have ESG, SDG, you're not part of it. I'm sorry. So that, in a way, is a punishment or punitive measure in itself, even though people don't see it that way.
My guest yesterday, Elena Jani of GreenTech, talked about an audit measure. That would be her wish list on the budget. Do you agree with that?
Audit measure? Well, audit is a good thing to have because it puts any organisation to be fully transparent what they do when it comes to their carbon emission, whatever they emit to the environment, and what they do with carbon. For example, from my point of view, people are so fearful of carbon. Yeah, but
shouldn't we be?
We are made of carbon, you and me. We are carbon-based organism. So the fact that we are made of carbon shows that God has been trying to tell us that it's how you manage carbon is the key. Carbon is not the devil, we are. So when you are able to sequester carbon, put it to good use, carbon is benefiting. I would probably, the next clarion call to the global economy is, we're talking about recarbonization. Mm. How to introduce carbon into the circular economy to good use. When you capture the CO2 or CO or whatever it is, put them in good use, which is carbon fiber, graphene, carbon N2, advanced materials, so on and so forth. Yep. And you can even reconstitute material to whatever that you like.
Basically CCUS or carbon capture, utilization, storage.
And you can create fertilizer, you can create food, carbohydrate, carbs.
So think about carbon in a different light, basically.
Yes. carbon is our friend, not the enemy. So when it comes to back to the audit issue, I think when you go beyond that, you have to think there's a comprehensive measure for you to participate in recarbonization. Decarbonization is the current buzz, but I'm looking at recarbonization to create that inclusivity to ensure that we are managing carbon.
That's my big takeaway from this conversation. The last one we had was tax sovereignty. Now it's recarbonization.
Yeah, I always come up with new types.
Yeah, it's a final comments before we conclude our conversation, Dr. Rira? Yeah.
So, for me, don't be afraid of this energy transition. Embrace the change, be the change. And hydrogen is coming your way, whether you like it or not. Basically, have gone beyond the point of no return. We had many false starts in the past, since the 70s. It is here to stay, and I hope everyone will embrace the economy and technology rollout as much as I do. I'm excited, and everyone should be.
I'm excited as it is, but having a teenage daughter that is environmentally conscious is also a handful. I got to deal with two issues now, environmentalism and my daughter. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Rizal Khairi Ahmad, the CEO of Nano Malaysia Berhad. You can learn more about Nano Malaysia and their work at their website or their social sites. Do check that out. Of course, Dr. Rizal is a prolific evangelist when it comes to the tech innovation and, of course, energy transition. So do check out his personal work at that as well. For now, that's all that we have. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one. We'll